Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Another great day for It's the Real.
Does the fun ever stop?
I believe, and look, we're Jewish, so maybe I'm wrong, but I believe the fun stops on Christmas.
Oh, the 13th day of Christmas.
The 13th day. We're not doing a 13th podcast in a row. We agreed to 12. We are not doing a 13th day in a row.
We are stopping.
I hope everyone has enjoyed all the podcasts so far. Who have we had, Jeff? The Roundtable?
Yeah. CJ Fly.
Right.
Officially Ice. We had Kim Osario. We had
Chris Stiles.
And Premium Pete.
Premium Pete, everyone knows him from the Premium Pete show.
Yep.
You know him from the Combat Jack show.
He has a long and fascinating history in this industry. Many industries.
Shoes. And finance. And
stabbing people.
That's right. The correctional facilities.
Yeah.
So, yes, a really interesting episode. I'm really looking forward to hearing people's remarks on this. I'm really happy about what everyone had to say about the Kim Osario episode. That was really great. Jeff, if people don't know by now, fuck them. No, actually. What are we doing February 23rd, 2017?
I have to go to my accountant.
What are you doing at the accountant?
Cashing out.
Yeah.
Because we're putting on a show.
We're putting on a show. What's it called?
Your Girls Tour.
Your Girls Tour. It's not a world tour.
It is Your Girls Tour. Speaking directly to you listening out there.
February 23rd, 2017. We're bringing special guests. We're bringing lots of new songs, old songs, storytelling. It's going to be an event that you cannot miss. SOBs, New York City, 204 Varick Street. I'm not going to give their phone number because we know the phone lines are going to light up because it's going to be lit. Tickets are on sale right now. It'sthereal.com. Go get them. It's going to be a hell of a night.
It's going to be a hell of a night.
When do you want to get into this episode, Jeff?
Right after people leave a comment on iTunes.
So close to getting into this episode.
I know.
Man.
But you want to know what?
5 stars.
Leave a 5-star review.
5 stars or
nothing.
And by
that, I don't mean like leave us 5 stars, although that is very much appreciated. I mean leave a 5-star review where I look at your review and I say, wow, that is a 5-star review.
Great job, all the people who are reviewing.
You want to know what I like? We don't even say not for real for real that much, and that's like caught on as like a thing.
I love it. Shout out to 2 Chainz, not for real for real. One more time, itsthereal.com. Tickets available for your girls tour coming February 23rd. Go right now, Jeff. When's the episode starting?
Right now, for real, for real.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. To The Wire Hit, a.k.a. Facts Only.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Clap and Revolve, a.k.a. Electric Slide.
Hey, yo, what up? It's Pete, Premium Pete, a.k.a. Brajol, a.k.a. Brajout, a.k.a. Baked Ziti, a.k.a. fucking lasagna, a.k.a. my mother don't cook it, I don't eat it. What's up?
Yeah, and this is a waste of time with It's The Real. Shit. What's happening?
We did a drop a while back.
We did.
A couple of years back, and it was epic, and I played for a while over the podcast ear hole.
Yes.
Yeah, I always love the energy that you guys bring, man, and thanks for having me.
No, of thank course. You for coming
Happy
up.
Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Is it Hanukkah yet?
Yeah.
Well, okay, then yes.
No, I didn't know. I just said.
Yeah.
Thank you for making it through the frigid temperatures to make it all the way here.
Yeah, New York City has, a wind chill. you know, it's that time of the year. It's New York City. And this doesn't
make it any better, but it's...
I will say I was a little bit concerned that we would never get cold temperatures again.
Oh, just like for global warming's sake?
Yeah.
But it's here.
Well, I call it bipolar weather because I really think that before the end of the year... Or maybe even the top of the year, we'll go back to 60, 70.
That's 80.
Yeah. And it's bipolar.
Yeah, bipolar weather.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us are bipolar.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And, why can't weather be?
Jeff meant it like bipolar, like yeah. Bipolar.
Yeah. Bi blazer.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations on the Premium Pete podcast.
Yes, I can't believe
which we were guests on, and we appreciated you having us on.
Yeah, it was a great episode. I really enjoyed, like I said, I've always liked your humor. I always liked the knowledge, particularly, too. I think that's what's great, too, because I think sometimes, like, in hip-hop, particularly, you'll get, like, a lot of people that, like, there's white people, I think, that try too hard, mm-hmm. And I think that you guys always came across as not only just cool kids and just down-to-earth kids and really just true to who you are, but, you never tried to be something that you weren't, and you guys know your shit. And I think that means a lot. Like for instance, like Rosenberg, you know, sometimes I think, you know, he is annoying to some people and he may do some things that bother people, but you can't take away that guy's knowledge.
Right.
I mean, he's like a fucking almanac. Right. You know? Is that how you say that?
I don't know.
I have no idea. That's more Jewish than we would
I know.
Go.
No, but, that wasn't Jewish. That was like the sports book, like an almanac. Is that what it's called?
Oh, almanac.
Almanac.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Italian. I pronounce shit wrong. I'm sorry. But anyway, he knows his shit.
Yeah.
You can't deny somebody that knows their shit.
Also, like, Peter is a great friend to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, I from now on, I want to call him an almanac. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I just want to go with that. So, you've been doing, how many episodes deep are you now?
37.
37.
Yeah. Again,
are you going to quit?
Yeah. I actually didn't want to start. I was worried about numbering them in the beginning.
Because?
Because I just felt like when you number stuff, like, it just becomes, like, so old. You know, but I wound up staying with numbers, you know.
I think it works, and I think, although we're in this weird space where like, we're doing, you know, 12 podcasts in a row, mm-hmm. which is not our usual weekly thing, and so when I think about how many weeks we've done, it's all confusing because the numbers are all whack, but I don't even know anymore. But the fact is, there was a point where you were not on a podcast, and you decided to start your own. How nervous were you in getting back into the game with your name at the top of the masthead?
Well, you know, being early in the podcast game, particularly in hip hop, I should say, because I mean, podcasts have been around for a minute, but you know, being you know, I guess one of the early members of the Combat Jack Show, and you know, I'm thankful to have had a hand and voice, you know, in shape, you know, what it became. But moving on my own, it was I was nervous, and I was nervous only because, you know, it's like I always like doing something with somebody. I'm a weirdo, and you know, even like growing up, like I remember we used to go to this in Brooklyn. There was this place called More Fun. It was an arcade, and I loved arcades like after school. And a lot of kids I hung out with, like, you know, like I didn't have a lot of money either, but you know, I would get a little allowance here, a little thing here. But a lot of kids I hung out with, they didn't have a lot of money. So if I got like $5, and I'm like, let's go to the arcade, and they're like, yeah, I don't got no money, and I'm like, yo, I'll split this half with you. And I always been like that. I always wanted to, you know. Anything I've done, like, you know, I go to Atlantic City years ago. I used to love gambling. If I won money and I was hanging out with somebody that didn't have it, I just, you know, if they, I talk about my homies, not just strangers,
right.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And but I'll make sure they have or whatever they, you know, need. And so doing it on my own, you know, I felt like, damn, now, you know, it's like people, you know, it's world judgmental, you know, and it was so much more podcast. So it's harder to grow a podcast. You know, when we did the podcast, it wasn't that many fish in the water. You know, as far as like in our realm, but it was dope. It was, and you know what? I really did it because the people, and I mean that. You know, there was a lot of people more than I ever expected that were tweeting me and emailing me and direct messaging me and telling me how they missed my voice on the show and how they missed my input, whatever that was. And they were very honest about it. Like meaning, like they were like, if you spoke for 5 minutes or 50 minutes an episode, we miss you. You know, and you know, I mean, I think that. You know, ultimately, combat is where he's supposed to be. You know, it's a Combat Jack show. So, you know, it's entitled that, you know.
Right.
And he's done a great job. I just feel like, you know, we brought, like, a good barbershop banter, a good mixture. You know, because I'm not saying he's not the comedian type. You know what I mean? He's very knowledgeable, you know, very smart and somebody that digs into people's, you know, lives and... You know, so I mean, I'm not saying it's not funny, but I feel like everybody else helped bring
some levity to that.
Yeah.
Do you miss the Combat Jack Show?
You know, that's a great question. You know,
thank you.
No. I do miss those guys, but we went through some drastic changes. You know, for a while, I would say, I guess we had some type of weird. I don't know if you. I would never say podcast beef because there is podcast beef. But,
yes, right. I'm trying to head that up.
We'll get into that. We'll get into that. But no. You know, I just look. This is a new episode. I haven't spoke about it. But you know, shout out to Dallas Penn. You know, I had him on the show recently with Tagstone, and he was like, "Yo, there's an LSN party. It was an LSN holiday party," and he was like, "You know." After your show, we should go. And I was like, I don't want to go, you know. And he was like, yeah, we should go. So he's like, look, Pete, you know, you need to. And I feel like me and Dallas have such a great relationship after all these years. He's the one that brought me on the Combat Jack Show. Mm-hmm. in 2010. And, you know, just he was like, oh, you just need to be a better politician. You know, he's like, you need to be a better person, you know, to move. You know, you don't have to take everything so personally. And just sometimes, you know, you don't have to go, you know, full-fledged with your heart into it. So I said, all right, I'll go. So I went and I seen Combat and, you know, we had a brief conversation, but I basically let him know that, you know, I didn't like the way that communication was and way things, you know, were handled, you know, through each other and how it was handled afterwards. But I did let him know that, you know, no one could take away what we, you know, did together. Unbeknownst, who would ever thought that, you know, I could do that with him. And also, you know, no one could ever take away what I brought and contributed to the show. And I thanked him because at the end of the day, like, real talk, anybody out there that's been in a situation of change, you know, you got to think about it. You know, it's tough in the beginning, but, you know, I mean, I doubled up. Like, I got my own show. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I was, to be honest with you, I was upset about that not making, you know, a monetary, I was trying to make money.
Mm-hmm.
We got to a point where we were making money and I felt like I wasn't getting what I wanted to get. So, you know, now I'm getting more than what I could have probably ever got from him. So, you know, I doubled up on myself.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I do miss those guys for what we created, but I'm excited for the new opportunities that, you know, lie ahead.
Yeah. I would just say, like, you know, seeing you guys on Instagram together in those pictures from the holiday party, I was very happy to see that. You know, I thought that you guys might have squashed it before the party, but
regardless, I think we're all glad to see those pictures and hope for new opportunities moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope. Well, hey, who knows? Maybe we'll have them come on the Premium Peace Show. That should be an eventful thing, you know, for the people that care,
People that don't care, they're still not going to care. But
true. Yeah. But, you know, but that's why I always try to mark things down in my life. As not only like for people listening, not only like a Premium Pete Combat Jack, just in general of if you're ever in a situation like this and you feel like, hey, you know what, I'm worth this much, or you know, and then somebody says, well, no, not really, and then you know you believe in yourself and you go forward, you know, and here's the thing, at the end of the day, I believe in taking an opportunity for no money. We worked that Combat Jack show for 4 or 5 years before we seen money.
Yeah.
You know, people want things right away these days. You know, we worked that for years. So when there was money to come, that's the problem too. When you do things with a lot of people don't set it up for when money does come.
Right.
You talk about it, but then when it comes, things get strange.
Yeah, like even when like you're working with your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you piece of shit. You better give him fucking his cut. But yeah,
Pete, where are you from in Brooklyn originally?
Brooklyn, New York. So I grew up in Coney Island. And when I was a teenager, deep Coney Island, like, yo, my uncle owned the go-karts, man. He owned the
really?
Go-karts. Yeah, it's funny. When I say that, I feel like people, not that you guys would think, but I feel like people, that sounds rich. But meanwhile, the go-karts at that time was like fucking hustle bustle. Like, you know, it was like $3 a go-kart.
Yeah, I mean, look, to me, it just sounds cool.
Yeah,
it's just like,
yeah. I mean, back in the day, I'm talking about. Yeah. He owned them for many, many years. Yeah, so he owned the go-karts and he owned a little concession stand that sold like cotton candy. Candy apples. And
what did your folks do?
My father was he worked multiple jobs, but he was always worked in the city. So you know, he worked in like banks and financial guy. You know, he eventually wind up later on in life, you know, doing way better for himself, becoming like a CFO of like, you know, a financial company like Merrill Lynch. He worked, you know, stuff like that. My mother never worked at you know, she was a typical Italian apron wearing. Housewife, if you want to say.
And what was growing up in Coney Island like in terms of like the summers versus the colder months?
Okay, so I had a front yard, which was very weird. Growing up in Coney Island, like, you know, the block we lived on, you know, everybody had backyards. We had a front yard. So it was like everything we did was in the open, you know, like I couldn't even, you know, it just was weird. So, you know, but it was, it taught me, I'll be honest with you, I feel like, growing up in Coney Island, for me as an Italian-American, really shaped who I am today because it gave me a chance to see a melting pot. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was, you know, drug dealers, there was mobsters around there, there was, you know, black people, it was Puerto Rican people, it was Asian people, and I was able to see a mixture of that, and I'll explain to you how. When we made a little bit more money, when I was about 13, my parents moved out of, because we were living with my grandmother. So, he bought a house and in Bensonhurst, and when I moved there, I'll never forget. I go there, and all of a sudden, like, this guy comes over to me. It's like Italian guy, and he's like, "Hey, Pete, let me talk to you for a second." So I was like, "Hey, what's up?" He's like, "Yeah, you can't have those fucking people around here." So I said, "What people?" He said, "Yeah, you can't have those black people around here." And he was talking about, like, this kid I used to hang out with, his name was Kanish. His name was, you know, another kid's name was Isaiah, and another kid's name was Tom. Anyway, one was Puerto Rican, two were black. We used to play Sega Genesis, Altered Beast, mm-hmm. you know? So it didn't sink in, because I was just doing what we were doing all those years on Coney Island.
Right.
But I didn't realize. So imagine if I grew up in Bensonhurst as an Italian, and let's be real. I have to be real against myself. As an Italian-American, which mostly people in Bensonhurst were at that time, I would have been just like that.
Yeah, and then you would have grown up positive. Yeah. Different set of values.
Yeah, you know, so that was you know, it's just my grandmother had a house in Jersey in the summer, and we used to go there, and that was like my escape, my getaway. You know, I wish I would have been able to do more. You know, one time we sat down with RZA, and he spoke about having an uncle, I forgot where, but like in Florida or somewhere, and how much that helped him get away from like the pissy projects of Park Hill and Staten Island. And you know, it's amazing to see, like, you know, when, and you guys sat down with a lot of people, when you sit down with some of these people and you see where success lies or longevity lies, mm-hmm. you realize, you know, even as a parent, like you try to learn these things, how does this work for your kids and how does it work for the future? And I guess what I'm trying to say is see more at a young age, you know, mm-hmm. get, like I tell my daughter all the time, she lives in Brooklyn, I tell her, be more than a Brooklyn girl. Mm-hmm. Get off the block. Don't be that bubblegum fucking popping Brooklyn girl with a hair up in a ponytail and Jordans on and sweatpants, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, get like be different. Like, you know, like that's the thing, too, I hated about Brooklyn in my neighborhood. I was telling this to my friend.
In Bensonhurst.
In Bensonhurst, in Coney Island, in Bay Ridge, and all those areas. Like, everybody I grew up around, like, it's like, you know, like, we were neighborhood kids. We lived outside. Like, I spent most of my time outside. You know, you would hear my mother, like, you know, Peter, dinner time! She would scream, and it was the only time we would come home. And, like, anything we did, like, Christmas, you know, after we done opening a prison, run out. You know, yeah. like you felt like you were going to miss something. Keep in mind, this generation stays mostly inside.
Right, right.
A lot of us, like, I was outside all day. We play Manhunt. We play, you know, Green Light 1-2-3.
Yeah,
play,
yeah.
You know, like so I didn't want to miss anything. But the problem was, in where I grew up, and how I grew up over there, and this is a fault, and I wish it could have been better, but, you know, I didn't have people teaching me about credit, you know, and to my default, you know, to the default of my parents, I feel like they grew up in a time where they waited for a certain age to be able to do things, like, mm-hmm. well, you got to be able to do this at a certain age, where I think, like, man, you should teach your kids how to learn to build their credit at a young age. Or even, like, being a homeowner. Like, I never had, like, the neighborhood I grew up in later on in teenage years was, like, gangsters, like, that I looked up to. They carried all the money they had in their pocket. So if they had $4,000, they had a big rubber band. It looked like it was big money, but they didn't have nothing.
Right.
Their fucking, you know, their car was under their mother's name. You know, they were so scared about everything. It just was bad values.
Yeah, right.
It was bad values that you know, people look at gangsters and, like, they fear them or admire them, some people. Mm. But meanwhile, most, I don't want to say it like this, but what I'm saying is most of them don't have no real values.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, you don't realize that until you get older.
Before you moved to Bensonhurst, what was Coney Island for you? What, did it feel like a bubble? Like, did you spend your summers on the beach? Did you leave that part of town and visit other parts of Brooklyn?
Yeah, not many. You know, we were real Brooklyn people. You know, I really didn't get to go out of town until, like, you know, that house in Jersey that we used to go visit once in a while where they had a lake. I never even knew what the fuck a lake was. You know, I took a shit in it too one time. You know, but to be honest with you, the lake was a beautiful thing, because growing up in Coney Island, we go to the beach. Like, I'm talking about, there was fucking shopping wagons in the beach. Mm. There was crack vials in the beach. Like, that's the weirdest thing. Like, I got used to swimming in a beach that had fucking plastic dime bags, crack vials, and shopping wagons. Like, in the fucking ocean. Like, the, you know, like I didn't see no koi, you know, yeah. like, you know.
This,
and
also was not the heyday of Coney Island.
No. It was.
They still had the freak grimy. Or, like, you know.
Yeah, it was grimy. It was super grimy. I mean, it was crack vials all over the beach sand, too.
Did you shit in the ocean?
No, I waited till I got to the lake.
Yeah.
The sad thing about it was, you know, it was a beautiful change. I was like, oh shit, this lake is awesome. And
mm-hmm. You had to mark your territory.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a bear in the woods.
So once you did move to Bensonhurst, now you're about working age. What was your first job?
Newspaper route.
Really?
Yeah.
On a bike or walking around?
No, a wagon.
A wagon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A wagon. I used to just take it. It wasn't
that
far. Did
you grow up in the 1950s?
What paper was it?
No, Daily News.
Daily News.
Daily News.
Did you read the paper too, or did you?
No. Actually, I had John Franco as my customer from the Mets.
What?
Yeah. John Franco.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Great tipper. His wife was hot. Wanted to fuck her.
He should have let you fuck her as a tip.
That's right.
Yeah. He was really. Yeah, I wish he would have.
Yeah, if he was, if he was a really or decent guy.
Let me tell you something about John Franco, man. Unfortunately, I became a lazy paper boy.
Uh-oh.
And what I mean by that is, like, I would just wrap up the paper well, like, and throw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was hitting his screen door too much. So one time he came out and he was like, oh, you know, like early in the morning. He was like, stop fucking throwing the paper. And I was like, John, I'm sorry, John, you know, and you know, I finally just would then walk up the steps and bring. I was trying to be fast,
yeah,
you know.
Efficient.
It was early in the morning.
Well,
I want to finish.
Were you inspired by the Nintendo game Paperboy?
Oh, I love that game. Yeah, that Excitebike, all that. I mean, you
which
know.
The point of the game is to break shit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did. I was. You know, you meet. That was, to be honest with you, that was when I used to collect. You know, the money mm-hmm. Weekly. You would meet all these people, and that was like another task of like. You know, seeing all people from all different walks of life. You know, it's like, you know, and I mean, there was this lady who looked like a frog, I swear to God. And the way she licked her money was like she had a fucking long tongue. So I used to relate to her as a Tari, as a Frogger.
Yeah.
So a lot
but
of
but she never crossed the street.
No, she never crossed the street. No, she was fucking. And she gave me all change. It was in a Ziploc bag, all change.
That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Pennies, dimes. Fucking.
Was it like a prank show?
This is every morning?
Once a week, she would pay me. Yeah.
No. You
but every morning, yeah, every
morning,
yeah.
Before school?
Before school, yeah, yeah.
How early are you getting up?
Be honest with you, sometimes I was late. I think I had to be up by like 5 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock. Yeah.
Holy
because
cow.
keep in mind, the paper at that time,
yeah.
People, it was essential. It was a Bible for people going to the city. They wanted their newspaper.
Sure.
A lot of people that I was delivering the newspaper to worked in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So they would take their paper before they went to work, you know? And you know, I mean, you remember the days of the train, people, you know, with the paper. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know, I don't take the train no more, but...
Right.
When's the last time you took a train?
Today.
Yeah.
People wearing paint, you know, reading
no,
newspapers?
No, everyone's reading their phones.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are some people who read the paper. Come on.
What?
There are some people who read papers.
Well, maybe on, like, Metro North going to, like, Westchester.
I mean,
like
nobody's,
that.
Like, wearing, like, fedoras and, you know, like, slamming open the paper and being like, oh, you know, the horse race. And
yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
I need you guys to teach me something.
What's that?
Through my years of working in the city, because I took the train for many years.
Yeah.
A lot of the Jewish people. Now, how do you say
Hasidic?
Hasidic. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I always say Hasidic.
Yeah.
Hasidic.
Almanac.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. That little thing they're reading. That's yeah. What the Bible.
I don't
not
know.
The Bible.
The Torah.
The Torah. Now they move. They move their lips, the, right?
Yeah. A lot of them do, like, you know, say it out loud. Yeah.
No. I never hear them. So I was always trying to wonder, like you know, they would look at the page and you would never hear them say one word.
I think it's like they speak it to themselves, right? I mean,
I'm trying to learn
know.
This shit because,
no,
you know,
because
I,
have,
like, I never seen someone move their lips and you know, nothing come out. And I was just wondering, really. I'm being honest.
I think Jewish people do it. I think Muslim people do it. I think, like, lots of people do it. I don't know.
If we have any Hasidic listeners, please leave a comment and let us know. I don't know.
Okay. Come on. I'm sorry.
So,
no. Did you ever fuck up any New York Post delivery men?
I actually used to take that paper and throw it in the sewer.
No,
I swear to God.
Where it belongs.
God. Yeah, that's where it belongs. Fuck them.
Rick.
Fuck them. But I did because, they, you know, what they would do, if they would get there before me, they would pull my paper away or throw it away. Or people were scumbags. You know, think about it. They would, like, if it was raining, we used to have bags, and we used to put the paper in a bag.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if I would get there before I would find my paper outside of the bag. And I was like, you know. So anytime I saw their papers, I would always throw them in the sewer.
And so
I threw our neighbor's paper on the roof one time, and it stayed there for a couple of days, and they were very upset.
Nice. Well, but you didn't. This wasn't because, like, you were a rival of them or anything.
No, I was just
being a adolescent.
I was like, well, I'm going to put a paper on their roof.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
So you had your paper route. You're going to middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Where then did you go? What were you saving your money for?
Sneakers and arcade.
Sneakers. Yeah, what sneakers were you buying?
Jordans. I remember, like, you know, it's funny because it's like, you know, being so many years into this quote unquote sneaker culture. You know, I tell people all the time, like, there was no lines for Jordans. You know, you didn't worry about if they were sold out. You worried about if you had enough money. So, you know, I still couldn't afford it. So what I did was I worked with my parents where I'd be like, hey, you know, my paper route, if I came up with 50, because I think it was like $99 for a Jordan or 90.
What model?
One. Yeah. One. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, and twos and threes and, mm-hmm. you know, it was around that time. So three, I would say one, two, three, four. So one was like 85 and so you took about 86, 87, 88. So probably like, I would say like more, paper route was probably like threes, you know, fours.
Did you grow up a Knicks fan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And did you have any reservations about wearing the shoes of
Patrick Ewing?
No, of wearing Jordans.
No, I had no problem with that. Let me tell you something. In junior high school, this Chinese kid came in wearing the Jordan 3s. And that was the first visible air unit bubble, which mm-hmm. I was like, what the fuck is this bubble on a sneaker? I remember people not believing it was actually air in it and popping the fucking
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah,
is that what
yeah.
you did?
No, but I did it to other people.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, no, but I stabbed him.
No, I did it to other people. No, well, I
Pete was the one who walked down the hall when people had yo-yos, he would cut the cut the string.
The only time I ever stabbed people was when I was a member of the correctional facilities. But that was only because you had to stay alive.
Sure,
know?
Yeah. Sure.
And shout out to Juan, who is this Mexican kid. He made me a knife out of a toothbrush.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that he took the stabbing and like shot out
no,
the
no,
hand,
no.
Like.
He made me. I mean, it may have been a Reach or Colgate. I'm not
Are you
sure
trying
what
to get
it was.
Sponsored?
What are you doing? Now, let me tell you something. This fucking kid made this thing into the sharpest thing. I mean, it was so sharp. It was like one of those things you stick in a turkey to see if it fucking
you know, meat thermometer.
Yeah.
Shouts to Oral-B. Shouts to Reach.
Yeah,
shouts
else?
To all
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
It's the
please send us some free product so so Pete can turn into a shiv again.
Yeah.
But well, who are we talking about?
The Chinese kid with the
oh yeah, Chinese. it was amazing. Anyway, it just got everybody's attention.
And you're saving your money for those shoes, and there's no line.
No line.
You walk into where? Foot Locker?
I walk into a sneaker corner.
Sneaker corner
on Avenue I in Nostrand, I believe.
Okay, yeah. that's your local spot.
No, it was a spot that it was a spot that I knew of that had a lot of dope kicks.
Did you have a
Wait,
guy
that's
then?
A, that's not in. That's not in Bensonhurst, is it?
No.
That's in.
No. I got.
That's in Flatbush.
I got
or something,
tipped
right?
off. Yeah, yeah. There was some Foot Lockers. There was, you know, around, you know, by 86th Street. But,
did you have a guy at that point?
I didn't. You mean a connect? The
yeah,
plug.
Yeah,
the plug.
Yeah.
No, but eventually, when I started buying all of them, I wound up getting a plug. Yeah. I mean, I'm Italian, so we always look for like if we like something. I feel like, and hey, listen, any other nationality, I'm sure you do this. I'm not saying that. I'm speaking for me.
When the Jews do it, they just like mouth the words. Yeah.
No. Listen, they're firm believers. When
Eric, it's a hateful stereotype, and
I
don't appreciate
it. That's not nice. You know, even though I have ate matzah crackers. What did I call them? The ones I sent you, remember?
What, matzah bread?
No, not the bread. The cracker one where I put the butter on it. It's like a sheet.
Yeah, matzah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shout out to everybody.
Unleavened bread. It didn't rise. Yeah.
Trying to get sponsorships here. Shout out to matzah.
But now you made me forget what the fuck I was saying.
No, did you have a connect and you said...
Oh, yeah. Well, after I bought a couple... Oh, I was talking about Italians. I said what happens is whenever you... I know we're going to... Like, I always look at it this way. If you go to a restaurant and you didn't really like the service and you're not really from the area, you're not going to go back... Don't worry about what type of tip you leave.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going somewhere, you're going to go all the time. It is your necessity and your job to leave a big tip because they always remember you.
Mm-hmm.
Eric and Jeff, they got this restaurant they go to. They always leave a nice tip. Friday night rolls around, is fucking packed out the door. They see you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You best believe they're going to be working for you.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, that's the same thing with sneakers, you know. Like, that still exists these days, you know, where people take care of people, you know. Like, you know, and it's not only just for sneakers, just for connect, you know, to build anything.
So was there an idea that you would get into collecting? Like, was that even known?
I think I was doing it before I even thought it was an idea.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
You just like the sneakers.
Just like them. Buy another one. Because here's the thing, and I'll tell you, my mother and father, would not buy me a new pair of sneakers until it was literally talking.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, literally the soul. Like, for instance, my mother was so bad in her head.
How bad was she?
She was bad. She was so bad that, like, she would, like, if I would say, like, it would be like 10 months after I had this sneaker. And I'd be like, Ma, I need a new pair of sneakers. You just got them last week. I'm like, what the fuck is this lady talking about? You know, like, so. It came to a point where I was like, yo, I want to get more. So that's why I continued to work. And then unfortunately, you know, working, like doing the paper route wasn't good enough. So I got this job selling nickel bags of weed and these big pillows and branches and seeds. I mean, the bags were almost ripping apart, you know, but and I was able to buy more Jordans that way. You know.
So what did John Franco think when you threw it through his screen door?
The weed?
Yeah.
No, he didn't smoke weed. I threw, well, yeah. After
maybe,
that time.
Maybe old Frogger lady did, though.
Yeah, she probably did, most definitely.
So
yeah,
you
she
bought,
was smoking some swag. You start buying multiple pairs of shoes.
Yeah.
Did you always keep, like, one on ice?
Yeah, yeah, multiple ones that I liked. Like, you know, when I was able to opportunity to buy threes or fours, I would buy multiple pairs of them. You know, but then I got into Air Forces, you know, just like where it was like, you know, you get one in one color and then you realize there's more colors. And there was a lot of, you know, people that I was around that, you know, I grew up around a lot of older people.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got put onto 40 Belows. I got put onto Ewings. I got put onto, you know, Felis and, you know, suede Felis or shell tops. And, you know, even going back to Spot Belt and Saucony and Deodoro and, you know, all these pairs that were just, I just loved Jordan particularly, but I just love, you know, I don't want to stereotype, but like when you're like hustling,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, Jordans to me were everything, man. Like, I don't know, it's so weird to say that, but you know, it's like, I was like, and that's what I always tell people, hustle more for more than a pair of Jordans. Like, I know kids that were selling drugs just for an outfit. It's like, you're willing to risk to get locked up just for an outfit, you know, just for a pair of sneakers, you know?
So 14, 15, 16 years old, you're collecting sneakers. Around what number of sneakers do you think you have?
Maybe 20.
Oh, okay.
15, 20.
Pathetic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, at this time, it's pathetic. But, yeah. No, but at that time, you know, I remember my aunt saying, you got so many sneakers. I only got 3 pairs of panties, you know?
Did you keep them clean?
Yeah, absolutely. I always toothbrush at that time. I didn't really know.
Like, now now we're getting into a theme here. Toothbrush, yeah. you know, to stab someone, toothbrush to clean.
Well,
your
that
shoes.
Was later on. Yeah. But yeah, toothbrush. Yeah.
Okay, let's just flash forward to today for a second. Are you of the same thought process as our mutual friend Clark Kent, where he's like, wear your shoes, get them dirty?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What happened was, but I didn't grab that opportunity until way later on. And what I mean by that is, so, you know, I meet the lady I'm with now, and I'll never forget, like, I forgot what it was, like maybe a weekend or whatever, and she and I was like, damn, man. I was like, we went to the Bahamas, and I was like, I would like to go back. And she's like, yeah, yeah. She's like, let's get, you know, our bills straight, and, you know, we go back. Because, you know, I don't even think we had a kid at the time, but, you know, we just got a lot of bills. Like, shit, we had a homeowner, you know, she has a car, I have a car, you know, a couple other, you know, things. And I go in the garage where I have maybe 200-300 pairs that, you know, I had more. That's low right now.
Yeah.
And I go in the garage, and I look, and I see, like, five, you may not know what they are, but like five Dornbecker Jordan, like threes, or, you know, the Superman ones, Jordan 4. I'm like, what the fuck am I? Like, it hit me where I was like, what's the matter with me? Like, I was like, you know, I was like, what am I doing? I'm buying something just so it sits there. Like, come here, Lou. Okay, we're going to put you away. As long as nobody touches you, you're going to be all right over there, okay? We'll come back for you another time. I can do nothing with you, but you're going to stay there. You know, so I was like, what am I doing? So I was like, you know, I feel like I was late in my mind to think about it as it's a business. It's a business. Absolutely, it's a business. So what I did was, I had 4 pairs of that, 4 pairs of that, 4 pairs of that. I wound up taking 2, 2, and 2. Brought them right to Fight Club. A couple $1,000 later, I was like, "Yeah, we're going back to Bahamas. Why not? You know what I mean? Like, like, why not let your collection or your habit pay you back? You know?
Did you collect anything else?
You mean after that?
No, over the years.
Like,
I'm a hoarder. I'm a hoarder. Like, I can't put the car in the garage because I got so much shit. I mean, I still have vinyl records, newspapers. I got newspapers when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup.
You gotta say that,
when,
though.
To when, you know, I got newspapers, you know, articles that went when I got a... It's funny because this is... I feel like I did a spider, even though he did it later. Christopher Moltisanti from Sopranos. Yeah. When his name was in the newspaper, he went up fucking... getting every single newspaper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's this thing in Brooklyn, I don't know if they have it, it's called police blotter.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so, you know, I had to get... There was a, like, we got arrested for something, and I thought it was pretty cool that my name was in there. That they were like, you know, suspect, you know, Peter, blah, 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 yeah, you know, yeah, was caught, you know, on top of a roof, you know, like... And I was
with
like,
my newspaper?
No. You know, it's just it was some arrest, and I was like, oh, okay. It was like, you know, they made it like it was a little... Right, anyway, like, it was a big
you
deal.
Were a kingpin. Right.
Well, not a kingpin, but, you know. But, yeah, so...
Sorry, a princepin.
But, yeah, you know, I mean, it was times like that where I feel like, you know, where I was probably just searching too hard, you know what I mean? Searching too hard.
When did you get your driver's license on the first time?
First try? I took my mother's car. I stole her car.
Okay.
When I was 16 and went and got my permit in Staten Island. I drove it over the bridge, yeah.
And you got it.
And she called me. She's like, where the fuck are you? And let me tell you something. I used to steal my mother's car all the time when I had no license. Mm. All the time. And
she knew the keys.
The biggest problem was by getting it back in the same spot. Like a fucking retard, I didn't think. So then when I started thinking, I'll never forget the time I didn't think. She had a spot right in front of the house. How the fuck is you going to, next day, when she goes out, it's down the block,
right,
you know?
Right.
Unless she's like, I'm going crazy.
Right. It's so like rearranging the furniture for Helen Keller. And
exactly. Yeah. You know, next, it would be a mess.
Yeah, yeah.
So she turned. So my mother, I took her keys. I took the car. I went out with my friends. We went for a joyride. Mind you, I'm only 16 years old. I don't have a license or anything.
Mm.
So I take it, we're driving around, and I fucking say, oh, shit, I forgot to put, like, a garbage pail or anything in front of the fucking spot.
Reserve the spot, yeah.
I come back, there's a spot, but it's very small. So I was not looking to take the L on that one. I called up all my friends, and they picked up the front of the car and the side of the car, I swear to God, and they put it in the spot because I couldn't parallel park it. So I pulled right up to it, and they picked it up. And I had some big friends at the time. And there were like six kids in the front, six kids in the back, and put the fucking car right in the
spot. This is like a Happy Days episode.
Yeah. Does your mother know now?
Well, and that got in the morning. Those, like, the person in the front left. So just, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It escaped. But yeah, she knew. What do you mean? She, when I went to go get my permit, she caught me. She's like, you don't even have a permit. I said, yeah, now I do.
Wait, how did she call you?
I had a cell phone, yeah.
When was this?
Yeah, this was 90.
You got one of those brick phones?
92, 93, yeah.
So was there like a car phone?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So you...
I was hustling.
Yeah. So you got your car. Did you have your own... When did you get your own car?
My own car I got when I was 18.
Okay.
I got a Lincoln Mach 7.
Big car.
Only time I ever had a two-door, and I'll never have it again because it's like you got to fucking open it up for somebody. You got to get in. You got to get out. It's too much headache, you know?
Where were you driving?
Man, all around. I met a girl in Staten Island. It's funny because I met this girl in Staten Island through a program I was at.
Mm-hmm.
So just to rewind back real quick, when I was 17, I wound up getting mandated to a group home. I got arrested for selling those nickel bags.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, it was very easy for you just to say, hey, I'm an addict. And they're like, okay, no jail. You go to a program. So I went to this program in Staten Island, and it was a residential program. And I had to do 15 months in there. And it was crazy. So I remember seeing, like, I was 17 years old. I remember seeing, like, kids coming 14 years old on heroin. Like, Staten Island was, let me tell you something. Staten Island doesn't get enough credit as being as thorough and crazy as it is. There's a lot of spots that are really, really popping, man. Like, you know, at that time, it was, I think, like, Stapleton, Park Hill. I'm not sure if it was either West Brighton or New Brighton, one of them. You know, Mariners Harbor, Port Richmond. Like, there's a lot of spots that were super, super thorough. So I'll never forget this one time. There was this Haitian kid. His name, I think his name was James Julian. And so at that time, I already had time in. So when you get approved for a weekend pass, you got to go home with this person. So I was like, fuck. So he lived in Park Hill. So it's like, fuck, here I am, this fucking, you know, Italian kid, skinny fucking, you know. I was like, what the fuck am I? Let me tell you something. Went home. He was part of the crew, like the, I forgot what they exactly called, but where Wu was, where Ray was, mm-hmm. I'd seen Ray, RZA, Ghostface, all of them. I'd seen all of them because he was right in the I forgot, I think it's like 161 or 16 something. They used to, you know, it was, they all had jackets at the time, like varsity jackets.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget, like, he went over to them. It could have been Ghostface or RZA smoking a weed. And I'm supposed to, like, be watching him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he looked at me. I looked at him. I'm like, yo, do whatever the fuck you want. I'm not fucking, you know, getting involved in this shit. But, yeah, you know, but I stayed in Staten Island, and that's where I met the girl. And then that's when I got the car.
Well, what did your parents think when you got that charge? And then you were like, well, I'm an addict. Did they think you were?
Well, I did smoke, but, you know, I mean, I guess none of us consider ourselves addict until it gets really crazy.
Right.
You know, I felt like I had addictive personality. You know, like there was a lot of times, like, I feel like I'm a prime example of not judging a kid by his parents.
Because
mm-hmm. my parents are good people, and they raised me right. It's just that, like, I always look at, like, I never looked up to my father until later on. I always looked at him like, you know, like the Bronx Tale movie, you know, mm-hmm. like working man's a sucker. You know, like, I had problems in the neighborhood. I used to tell my father, he'd be like, well, we'll take care of the situation and we'll see if we could get something out of it. And, you know, I wasn't what I was looking for. I wanted the guy who was like, well, fucking break his head, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what I, you know, so I didn't look up to my father at that time until I got older, and the respect really, you know, like De Niro said, like, the working man is, you know, is a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let somebody put their pants on every morning, wake up every morning, and provide for their family. That, you know.
And were you able to express that to him?
You know, it took a long time. It took a long time. You know, I'll never forget, you know, I was high one time on acid and weed, and they had me in the cell. This is when I felt like a real degenerate piece of shit at that time. Like, they had me in the holding cell in the police, and my father came in, and I couldn't. I looked at, I didn't even know he was there. He just looked like Pac-Man, you know, at the time. And he's like, take a look at yourself. And I was like, I can't even see you. How the fuck you want me to look at myself? But at that point, I did realize. But what one thing that was dope was me and my father always had like a shaky relationship. Due to the fact that he worked all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that I didn't have a father. He just wasn't there because he worked all the time. So it's weird. It's like kind of like you look at somebody as like, you know, having to provide for their family but not being able to be there, and then you get that resentment.
Right.
You know, it's like being a – now I'm a parent. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he in the group, in the residential program that I was in the group home, there was a time where you get to, you know, invite your family. We were in a long group, and mm-hmm. everybody would go over things that bothered them with their family. And I'll tell you, that was one time where I saw, like, blood kids and different, like, you know, gang members, like, crying about, like, you know, their uncles, not, you know, beating them or beating their mother or witnessing, you know, the father make their mother go strip, you know. Just some really fucked up shit that really, you know, stuck with me. And, you know, I spoke about my father weirdly, anyway, to make a long story short, they give you a quarter, and when you come downstairs, you give a little speech, and you give that quarter to the, you know, person. I chose my father. I never forget. He got up. He was bawling, crying. He was like, you know, he was, you know. I told him, I said, look, I made mistakes, and you know, you made mistakes, you know, because you know, I says, but you know, let's work on, you know, the future. So,
mm-hmm.
And we have a great relationship today, you know. So yeah,
that's great to hear. Did you graduate high school?
No, I got a GED.
Okay.
Good enough diploma. I couldn't. I was a retard. You know, when I look back, I'll be honest with you. I appreciate a lot of things that happened to me in life. You know, even the failures, because it made me, you know, who I am today. But I did a lot of things. I wish I would have did a lot of things different. For instance, the whole 11th grade, I hung outside. Like I should have just went somewhere else. Why go to school?
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm trying to say? I hung outside the school the whole 11th grade.
You're just asking them to find you.
Yeah, it was like everybody was there. There was girls. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would go home once in a while, you know, have sleep with this girl, go to, you know, eat here. I was living like that. I'm going to do whatever I want, life. And, you know.
Did you look so cool hanging out outside
the
school?
Yeah, I was cool. Yeah, it's funny because I tell my daughter, too. It's like, you know, like my daughter said something to me the other day, and I had to put her in a fucking place because I told her. She says, I'd rather cry in a Benz than I forgot how she said it, like something like where she'd rather cry in a Benz then cry on something to the fact of where like she would think that money would or a prize, she should be, but like a prized possession would make everything okay. And I said, I know people, tons of people with money that are lonely and miserable.
Right.
So you know, you don't always think like that, you know.
So after high school, after you come back from Staten Island.
Well, here, I'll give you a tale. It's funny, I never ever even spoke about this, but you know, when I was in that residential program, about 8 months in there, I became a junior counselor, and I started helping kids, and there was a lot of people that, you know, were in there that related to me, you know, and they would really just, you know, hold on a second. You know, and there was a lot of people that related to me then. And it's crazy because, you know, think about it, a lot of counselors were like older, so a lot of these younger kids didn't want to really open up to them. So I started helping these younger kids out, and before I graduated from there, they offered me a job. But it was like, you know, this is sad too because counselors don't make a lot of money. I think it was like $17,000, but at the time, I used to go to check my father in the city, and I met these Japanese guys, and I was helping them out that worked, you know, that were bosses of my father. And I was helping them out because their kids were always looking to find, like, you know, brand stuff like Avizu, you know, and Red Monkey and all this stuff. And I knew where everything was in the city. And so I would bring them around. So they offered me a job for double that.
The Japanese
know,
guys.
Yeah, the Japanese guys. And my father's, not my father's job, like the sister parent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To be like, you know, like I worked like, just did like data stuff, and you know, but they also made me take out people that were in town, but they offered me double, so I went for the money. I was young, and you know, and it sometimes I think back, like, it bothers me a little, but I feel like I've done enough to be there for a lot of people, help people over the years, you know. But you know, it's like I was gonna go for my counselor, you know, I was gonna go to college and go get the I forget what it's called, like maybe a ASA or whatever, like substance abuse counselor, mm-hmm, type, you know, certification degree. But yeah, they don't make a lot of money. A lot of those people just work from the heart. So, yeah.
Well, and at that point, what is your relationship with the shoe community, and how do you turn that into something where you're selling shoes?
Or
does that come later?
It comes way later. You know, I mean, I think I just continued to collect. I've always, you know, there was a lot of sneakers that came after that. You know, at that time, you know, Griffey's came out, mm-hmm, you know, Pippins came out, Up-Tempos came out, and, you know, all these, you know, like I said, all the different color Air Forces came out. And as somebody who's hustling, I mean, obviously we all wear sneakers, but somebody who's hustling, you know, you wanted all the flavors. And that went on for many, many years. And, you know, so that's what I always tell people when people say, how did you get into the sneaker culture? I was like, oh, there's no fucking form that I signed and waited to get approval. You know, I always said I'm of the sneaker culture. I'm not, you know, it's not like how did I get in?
Right.
I'm of it, you know. And I think it just became a community of people just being more outspoken. And, you know, getting together and
standing in line for hours and days.
Yeah,
and
I never did that, you know, thank God. You know, I was lucky to have a lot of friends and stuff like that. But even like when
you losers standing in line, get some friends.
Well, if you think about it, you know, my friend Mayer breaks it down. He says, if you stay in line for 2 days and you do the hours and the time, you know, you basically, you know, stayed in line for $8 an hour or something. Because if you buy the shoe for $200, say you sell for $800, you do the math. If you're there for 48 hours, you know, you do the math. So, mm-hmm, you know, it really doesn't make no sense. But
you know, you want to know what? $8 is a good job.
Keep on telling them that.
I'm just here to, you know, encourage the youth.
That's right. So at what point do you move out and get your own place?
Yeah, right after when I came home from Staten Island, you know, I wound up staying in Brooklyn and getting my own place. And just really, you know, from that job that I had gotten, really just trying to find myself, you know. It was a tough transition time because I was in between wanting to hustle and make regular money. That was like one of the first times I ever made, besides working the paper route, mm-hmm, made good money, legit, you know. So so that was a special moment in my time. And, you know, I got my own place and, you know, just young, trying to live it up, you know. So.
And when did you have your daughter?
I had my daughter in 2000.
Okay.
Yeah, at the end of my Wall Street career, at the end of my financial career. You know, I went up later on. I went up to trading commodities. I wanted to do risk management, so I went up to do real well. You know, I wear a suit and tie every day.
You went straight.
Yeah, I went straight. I went straight, and it was tough. And you know, even like growing up in a neighborhood I grew up in, like I wasn't making a lot of money, but like to everybody home, you know, especially those fucking gangster wannabe gangsters. Like, yeah. I used to come home in a suit. They're like, "Yeah, that fucking kid Pete, you got a tip in the fucking market?" I was like, "Yeah, what are you talking about? What tip?" Yeah, you know, you work in a stock market, you're making big fucking money over there. No, nobody's making big money. You know, people think, you know, they hear things, they see
things. Isn't it also like the same thing where it's like you are working in the city, which is like a big thing.
Yeah.
Like that's even like
You come home on a train, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you wear like, you know, nice clothes or whatever. It's just like, "Oh, well, excuse me, Pete," you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think sneakers have a lot to do with a lot of people in suit and ties, and those type of kids are the people who couldn't afford it when they were young. So when they get older and then they work a city job where they have a suit and tie all day, so they can't wait until the off time to rock kicks. You know, that happens a lot. You know who buys a lot of kicks too? Military people. All the time. When I was in retail, they always buy kicks. You know, they always. They don't know what to do with their money.
So, by the year 2000, did you think you were ready to have a kid?
I met this girl. You know, she, I didn't expect to, but you know, I'm gonna tell you what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, she had a kid, and I don't know why. Maybe it was the manly in me, but I was like, I want one too. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was like, because you know, it was tough too dealing with that transition. That's why I give a lot of advice to people today that I get with people who have kids, because you know, she would be on the phone with this guy, and I'd be like, "What are they talking about? Why are they on the phone?" You know, it's hard not to be jealous. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy's gonna come and pick up his kid. You know, you have to learn how to be, you know, friendly or not. You know, and so that was a tough transition. But I feel like I wanted a kid, and you know, we meshed well. Unfortunately, we didn't work out, but you know, I had a daughter, which ultimately wound up changing my life, because after I stopped working in the city, which was after probably I would say 9/11,
mm-hmm.
After I had her, I went back to hustling while I had her, which is the stupidest thing, but I just wanted to make some quick money and I wanted to do some things, and I wound up getting caught, and that was a second charge against me. So they wound up saying, "Hey, now you ain't going to no program, you're gonna go and eat apple crisp upstate," you know.
And what kind of conversation was that like with your daughter's mother?
It was kind of like, "Hey, you know."
Did she know what you were up to?
No, she never knew. You know, I mean, but that's the funny thing about girls, man. It's like
they love a surprise.
No. What I mean is, like, she loved all the extra things that was going on, but never asked. You know, it's like, you know, in Goodfellas, like, "Henry, what do you do? What the fuck do you think he did? You know, you think he was a construction worker?
Yeah.
He's walking in back at a fucking restaurant, you
know?"
He's,
and then, you know, when the helicopters start coming in, it's like, oh.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, you know, so it was tough, you know, and you know, I wound up, you know, it was a tough time, man, to go away. But here's the thing: a lot of people have kids.
Yeah,
they're out here selling drugs, going crazy. They have, you know, they don't. People don't think, man. You know, and I'm not being a preacher. I'm just saying, people are like, "Yo, I gotta do what I gotta do to survive," not realizing that when you go away, you take your kids with you. You take your parents with you. You know,
right.
You take, like, these people got to worry about you. You know, your kid is not there. Like, I went back and spoken to kids in jail all the time, and I was like, you know, it's funny. I said, "But yo, how many of you guys have a diploma or a GED?" Very few people were raised. I'm talking about a crowd of 2,000-3,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, "How many of y'all have kids?" Almost everybody raised their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, "Oh, you know, your kids right now, it's a summer day." At this time, it was the summer. I was like, "It's a summer day. The ice cream truck is coming around." You know, and you know, are you there for them? You know, think about it. Like, even like we had one time we sat with Little Boozy,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, "Oh, when I was away, my kids had everything." And I was like, "Yeah, but they didn't have you."
You, right.
Right, exactly.
So how long were you looking at when you were somewhere?
3 to 6. 3 to 6. Yeah, 3 to 6 years. I wound up doing 3 years.
Well, so. And how do you look at that? Do you look at it as 3 or do you look at it as 6?
Well, I wind up doing the minimum. I could have done less, but unfortunately, you know, I didn't get along, and you know, it took me a while to adjust, and that hurt me. Kind of like my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I finally, at a later age, I think I found myself. But you know, I was trying to get off, to be honest with you. I hired a Jewish lawyer. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to happen. You know, the Italian said, "You hire the Jewish lawyer." I said, "Okay." But he was honest. He was good. He got me off before, so he was very honest with me, and he told me, like, look, you know, they're not going to budge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I'll never forget the lady who told me, like, a lady judge, she said, "If you come back in front of me one more time, I'm going to give you football numbers." And I was like, oh, shit. Because to be honest with you, I was always just, sometimes I knew what I was doing, but I don't think you're ready for what's going to happen, mm-hmm. you know, and your life is going to change. So.
So did you think, like, all right, if I just get through these 3 years, I'll be good? Or did you think, like, there's a very real possibility I'll be here for the
No, I was worried because I wound up doing a year of that in the box, mm-hmm. which was... Honestly, sometimes, you know, very detrimental to I don't know, like, you know, there's a whole prison strike going on right now. And there's, like, you know, for the food or how bad it is. And, you know, it's like food poisoning. And, you know, and I know people may say, oh, well, you're in jail. What do you expect? You know, a French toast, you know. But no, but, you know, but just the standards of the food there are killing people, you know.
Right.
I don't want to lose what the fuck you just said. You asked me a question.
I was just wondering if you thought, like,
oh, if
the
I thought
minimum
I'd be,
or the maximum.
No. I knew that I was never going back. And that's how I felt because it was such a shocker. I became very emotional in that box. I always tell people this. Like, yo, in that box, I jerked off, like, fucking 32,000 times because I had to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I didn't know what to do. I read every book. You know, and sometimes, you know, you wouldn't be able to shower. The way they treat you there was crazy. And I know, again, I don't want people to think like, oh, you're in jail. What did you expect? A robe right. and slippers? No. But, you know, I used to hear people get beat up, like, from the guards, like for 30 minutes of this clip every night, you know?
Were you in one jail the entire time?
No, I was all over the place. And let me tell you something. When I was in that box, I'll never forget my daughter sent me a letter and my niece sent me a letter. I got it the same day. And it was about a 2-page way to, saying how much they love me and how much they miss me and how much they look up to me. And I said, what the fuck? I started crying like a fucking baby. And I was like, what am I doing? You know, who?
You're jerking off 32,000
Yeah, 32,000. Yeah, well, I didn't tell them that.
No, of course not. No. But I'm just saying, like, what are you doing?
That's yeah, let me tell you something. I jerked off so much, there was a fucking, it was like it was pie crust in the corner, you know?
That's where we'd go?
Yeah, it looked like that. You know, like,
you
like,
had a toilet
You know
in your
the
room.
Glaze before they put on the donuts?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, like, okay. It's a visual I'm not trying to.
No, I'm sorry. But I was like, yo, I'm coming home and I'm staying home because I'm never coming back. I felt that I was done, you know.
So. How do you keep track of time?
I tried to do that in the beginning and I found out that wasn't the way to move. So what I would do is read books. I would really sleep when I could and just try to continue, you know. There was very few people I could really communicate because you can't trust people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but I would just really focus, and you have nothing but time to reflect. And I felt like I took that time to reflect, and and really just plot for when I come home. You know, for everything I'm doing now and everything that I've been able to do over the years. And I always tell people, it's not about coming home; it's about staying home. Everybody I came home with, in New York sense, like that lived in the boroughs, they all went back. You know, so I've been home, 12 years. You know. And, I made a vow. I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to give him my time. So, mm-hmm. You know.
Are there any movies that you feel accurately depict?
Or jail? Television shows.
Yeah. Any of that?
Fuck. That's another good question, man.
Thank you.
That's two. That's two for, yeah. For those that count.
Track at
those
that you want to know what? But there's also a lot of negatives in my column, so.
Yeah, you know, federal wise, you know, I think Goodfellas overdid it, you know. But at that time, you know,
you were not.
Mob, I was in the
cutting.
Fence, yeah.
You were not
cutting
garlic
with a razor blade. No, but we were using the can top to cut. You know.
Also, you can use the back of a toothbrush.
Yeah, we didn't use. Yeah, well, that's people.
Yeah.
But it was. I don't know. I don't know what movie I would say, but. It's a good question.
And Get Hard featuring Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart.
Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. Not that. That movie was funny, though.
Well, I mean, you did Get Hard. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So you, you're moved around to different prisons. You're not trusting of anyone. You get letters from your daughter and your niece. How do you stay aware of what's going on the outside?
Just phone calls, you know, and just speaking to people. But I think that, you know, reading books and, you know, speaking to, like, family members kept me motivated and focused, because, to be honest with you, a lot of people come home, they're so outdated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, when I came home with some of those kids, like, when I went up to, I don't remember, when did Chingy come out right there? Do you remember?
Chingy? 2004, maybe? Is that right?
I think it was,
yeah, maybe
it was
earlier?
Yeah, maybe 2004, 2005, somewhere
there. I'm going to double check right now.
Yeah.
06? Is that late? Chingy.
But anyway, like, I never forget when I, you know, like, when I came home and I went to go visit somebody else, this was way later. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is way later, and they were still singing it. They were still, like, people were, are not saying everybody, at that time, I feel like people weren't fully, you know, when I went upstate, I was like, what the fuck are these people talking about? You know, like, what they thought was hot or what songs they were talking about were years later, you know, at that time, mm-hmm. you know, I felt, you know.
Did you get visits from family members?
All the time, man. Let me tell you something. Because
there are some people who don't want their families.
But, and there's some people who don't get visits.
Right.
Right.
You know, and that really made me sad, man. I mean, I know a kid that, never got a visit while I was there. I was there like 10 plus years. And, you know, I remember one time he was about to get a visit, and I think his grandmother was going to visit. You know, he shaved, and, it's sad. You know, I know, you know. I mean, people look at criminals, you know, or people who've done stuff, but there's a lot of talented people in jail, you know.
Right.
I used to make fun and say that the arts and crafts should be in jail, but there's kids that sculpture soaps, you know, that do handkerchief drawings. Like there's a lot of, you know, but
real quick, we ran into a friend of ours on the subway the other day who actually is working with some inmates on Rikers Island, and mm-hmm. said that they now have some type of music studio there for people to work, you know.
Are they going to make a podcast?
Out there. I don't know if they're going to make a podcast.
The Rikers Island podcast.
Yeah.
They were like, hey, welcome back. Whoop. Oh, shit. Stab him. Stab that right. Motherfucker.
Sounds like Caseless.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you did get visits from your family.
Oh, let me tell you something. All the time, man. I'm thankful. My family. And some of these rides were like 10 hours away each way.
Really?
At the time, my grandmother was like 80. She's 95 now, but she was like 80-something, and she was coming 10 hours each way.
Holy cow.
On a bus, yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so, you know.
Like, so what was it like the day you got out?
Man, I'll never forget it. My father picked me up. He rented a minivan.
Where were
you? Drove up there. I was in Brockton, New York.
What is a broccoli?
I don't know.
New York.
Growing up my broccoli. it was by Lake Erie.
Wow.
It was fucking far.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget.
Wait, is that where that's not where the inmates escaped from and they like did that whole manhunt?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't get involved in that. But actually, to your point, when I went into that jail, they made me give them a sock. They said, take off one sock and give it to me. And I was like, what the fuck? And I didn't realize
incentive to not
they put
leave.
It in a bag, no. And keep in mind your sock while you have it on, you're kind of sweating in it, right?
Yeah.
So it has a scent.
Oh.
And so if you ever escape, they give it to the dogs.
Wow.
So the dog will smell it, and then come after that ass, you know.
How come DJ Khaled didn't put that in his Major Keys book?
I know that is a major key.
That is major key. Yeah. So when I had to give them my fucking sock. And I was about to give him like a Donnie Brasco thing. I'm not taking off my shoes.
Did they give you your sock back when you?
I don't even know where my sock is right now.
They owe you.
If you have Premium Pete's sock, please leave a comment.
So your dad came to pick you up.
Yeah, so my dad comes and picks me up. We're in the parking lot. I'll never forget. It was my ex-wife who, you know, who was mm-hmm. still my wife at the time. My daughter, my sister, my mother. And my father.
Nice day out or?
What?
Weather-wise? Like?
Yeah, beautiful.
Oh, good.
So I walk out the front door after a lot of hassle by them. You know, they're like, we'll see you back. And I was like, no, you won't see me back. And I walk out the front door and I'm my daughter comes running. My mother comes running. They're hugging me. And tears came to my eye. It was really upsetting. And I was like, you know. And all of a sudden we get in the car and my father is looking at a map. of how to get back on the highway. And I said, I literally turned to him. I said, Dad, do me a favor. Get the fuck out of here. What the fuck are you doing? You know, he literally, he ripped out because I told him so, aggressively. Because he's like sitting in the, you know, in the parking lot looking at this fucking map. How the fuck can we get back? I don't care where you go. Just get the fuck out of here. Well, I had this feeling like they were going to come back outside and be like, yeah, come back in. You know, after doing 3 years, I was like, I didn't want to be bothered. And, you know, I'll tell you a tale I never told anyone. It was a minivan, so it was three rows. So I made my wife stay in the back seat, and me and her. And then my sister, my daughter, my mother, and my father, and the second, and the, obviously, driver and passenger row. Right. So I went, and then I went to play with my penis the whole way home. Yeah.
The whole way home?
Yeah. You about
up,
halfway.
Making up making up for lost time.
32,000 times in the back seat.
Yeah. I had to. I was like, I just put a hand on there. You know? And I was like, someone else's hand. You know?
So we...
What a dab of ranch.
Yeah. So you get home, and at that point, where is your head at for what you're going to do business-wise?
Well, here's the thing. I got home. I went away for selling drugs.
Right.
Possession, intent to sell. But they didn't want me. They wanted the big guy.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, you know, give them it. Like, I remember when I got questioned, they were saying, like, hey, listen, well, and it's funny. Like, this is funny how cops are. They're like, we possibly could probably give you off like a month or two if you could give us who the person is. Like, a month? What kind of fucking bargain is this? This is me exactly talking to him. So I said, I do know somebody that makes a real good fried chicken in Minneapolis if you want them. And they're like, as soon as they heard that, they're like, all right, get the fuck out of here. Because they knew I was playing around with them. But they wanted the guys I was around.
Do you want to name them on this podcast?
No.
What's the point?
And,
Jeff, you're a terrible interrogator.
No. But
I've been talking to the police.
but they want them, and I kept my mouth shut. So when I came home, it's funny because I kept my mouth shut. This kid didn't even take care of me. Didn't put no money in my commissary. Didn't come visit me.
Really?
Yeah. And it's so. This is what I love about the community I grew up in. When people found that out, they stepped up to the plate. So I had other people from the neighborhood I knew of, big people, small people, people I would never even imagine were putting money in my commissary. And when I came home, I swear to God, it was like, I would get a phone call. As soon as I got home, one of my friends bought me a cell phone, turned it on, and when I would, people were asking for me, I would go see them, give me $500, give me $500, before I know it, I had about $10,000. Who would give me $1,000, $2,000, here, get it back on your feet, just for not ratting, for keeping my mouth shut, even though they weren't affiliated with this kid. But they felt that was a stand-up thing to do. And they were like, here's a kid who's a stand-up kid. He goes away. The person doesn't even take care of him. That's how you, I guess that's how you fucking create rats. Again, I'm not saying these are the right things to do. I'm just saying this is what I was doing.
No, of course. Time. And you get back on your feet.
Yeah, I get back on my feet. And I had a friend that wanted to open up a sneaker store. And so I would, get into, doing sneakers. And I was like, yeah, that's right up my alley, obviously, so I wound up being downtown Brooklyn for about like a year. And then we went to Spring Street. Was there for a couple of years. And that's when I feel like the culture was already thriving.
Yeah. Right.
And I was able to just get right back in. I still had pairs that I've collected over the years. I was very knowledgeable on the product. And when we moved to the city and we're in Spring Street, I dealt with everybody. I dealt with Drake, when he just came out for a long time, him, Nico, Oliver.
Well, how do you get to be the guy?
I would say at that time I was one of the guys, but how I get to be the guy is just by, for instance, so I was friends with Teyana Taylor. And when she her mother, I was cool with her mother, Nikki, and she introduced me to Drake. That's how. It's always the word of mouth. I will say that. And it's funny. She came up to me and she's like, yo, got this guy's meds. He spits real well. You know the name Drake? Nah, I never heard of him. Like, it's funny. Like, I remember dealing with him the first time. I was like, so what do you do? He's like, yeah, kind of rap. And I was like, it's funny when I look back at like what he is now. Like, he should have fucking smacked me with his credit card,
Now he has his own Jordan.
But yeah. It's funny. I told him that actually moving forward. Bun had this. So Bun and Drake does this HAW. This is Houston Appreciation Week, and they did a Bun B tribute. So Drake flew down all like Bun's his like friends. Close friends, and they wound up finding Drake's not Drake, Bun's high school teacher.
That's crazy.
I was like in this like company car.
He did this is your life to Bun.
Something like that, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he brought out Hannibal Buress. He brought out Jeff Sledge.
Yeah.
Roberta Magrini, who's his publicist.
Yep.
A bunch of other people. And it's funny, I just actually had my son the day before, and they gave me the call, and they were like, hey, listen, Drake wants to bring you out here, and you know, we know that you just had a kid. And I was like, hold on one second. I was like, all right, I could go, you know? I could go, you know? You know, when I went there, I haven't seen him in a couple of years, and I was like, you know, I was like, bro, like, we hugged each other, and I was like, it's amazing to see where you've become. I showed him emails that I had of him, you know, phone numbers that don't even exist no more, you know, we're talking, you know, about that, how, you know, he used to bother me for joy. Like, he used to call me like multiple, like Christmas Eve, you know, I need the Space Jams, I need this, I need that. And to have your own Jordan now, you know, and to see where he is, like, that kid, like, the thing I don't think people really understand about him, like, is, and I guess he'll get made fun of because of it, but from what I've seen of him, he's like he crosses his T's, he dots his I's. Like, he was in that fucking place making sure everything was trim and proper. You know, making sure, like, that the handkerchiefs he wanted a certain way for Bun before he came in. Like, he made sure everything was okay. He just didn't pay. And, but, yeah, take care, put on my fucking bill. Yeah. And this kid was there making sure everything was correct. You know, making sure going around. And
that's really
like
decent.
That. Yeah. So, but it was a nice night. You know, like, they had, like, a humongous wall with Pimp C, Bun, and Drake. And it was like a humongous coloring wall. So people would go and color in the you know, characters.
Really, really special.
Yeah.
Shea Serrano do that?
The mayor came. Shea, I don't know if Shea did it. Shout out to Shea. He did a rap coloring book with Bun, and he's a nut job on Twitter.
So so you have this brick and mortar.
Yeah, so we had this brick and mortar. I dealt with so many customers. J Electronica, man, came in. You know, I'm friends with Frank FWMJ. And so he brought him by. Dude came in with fucking slides on with no socks, fucking ashy feet. I was like, dude, we're going to get you in a fucking pair of sneakers.
Well, and socks.
Well, yeah, socks too. Yeah, I think we did get him in socks. Yeah, we didn't put him in. I wouldn't have done that. That was like some European shit.
he's basically European now.
I know, right? Yeah. But that's something he never forgets too, you know, really wanting him. You know, he seemed like he wasn't in the greatest place. And Frank, me and Frank had a great relationship. You know, me and him hit it off. Like, even like Jay, I seen Jay where we reconnected. You know, that's one thing I guess to say. Like, I built a lot of great relationships with people just because having a good heart. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
I haven't seen Jay in years. A3C, they were doing like a Pimp C tribute, and we're in backstage, and you know, it was like me and Bun B and Rhapsody and Gip from Goody Mob.
Yep.
And Jay Electronica, I hear somebody say, yo, is that Premium Pete? And I can't even see. And he's like, and then he asks Bun, and Bun's like, yeah. And he's like, came over, give me a big hug, and was telling Bun how I looked out for him when he's like, yo, give me like such a hug. And then he came to A3C the next day, and we have videos out there on, you know, on the net where we're playing around, because he does like a little, like, you know, he's a horse plays with, you know, people, but like, you know, it's good to see. You know, I tried to get him on the Combat Jack show because I felt like I had the greatest link to him.
Yeah,
but he don't want people asking him questions.
Right?
How dare you ask him where the album is? How dare you? But yeah, so just building relationships, man. Peter Gation, his kid wanted to. Bro, Michael Douglas, Christian Slater, all these people became like you know what? You know what was one of the weirdest things about fuck sneakers? Forget about sneakers for a second. Just building relationships with people. I'll never forget, I met Michael Douglas. Grumpy motherfucker. And he was like, yeah, what are these What the Dunks? They were SBs.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're $1,000. $1,000. He's like, I guess his grandson or his, I don't know, his godson or whatever it is. But think about it. When does this ever happen? So Michael Douglas says, take my number down. Because I didn't have him in his size. I said I could get it for him.
Yeah.
Take my number down. Because you become of importance. You know what I mean? Like, I never, like, everyone I've dealt with, that started to happen. And I was like, oh, shit, like, this is real, and, you know. And then I made it more than just sneakers.
Yeah.
Holidays would come, you know, Merry Christmas, you know, and, you know, and form relationships. Scarface, you know, I have great Houston. Like, it's weird. I'm a Brooklyn kid with great Houston, you know, there's a lot of love for me down there, you know, and, so, you know, it's just dealing with a lot of people on you know, in the sneakers have really, you know, maybe. And then, you know, when I went with Combat and formed that, I was, you know, able to bring something to the table because I could make people knew who I was.
Right.
And I was able to reach out and grab some people, you know, and be able to do some things.
Were you or are you ever nervous that your phone will get stolen and people will get access to these
absolutely,
numbers?
Absolutely, yeah. Because, you know, I think about it. Even now, like I say to myself, here's the thing, right? People look at people as success as money. I never made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always had great relationships, been able to, the access or the comfortability, whatever you want to call it. But here's the thing. Sometimes I look at my phone and I feel like I'm not deserving. Is that a word?
It's not, but you want to know what? Neither is almanac.
Almanac. Okay.
Well, I'm not deserving of, like, you know, like, you look at all these, like, I do think like that because I, you know, I have a lot of numbers in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's funny because you look at, like, people I grew up with, they don't understand, like, even, like, I'm sure people you grew up with probably don't understand this.
No,
this
of course, correct. Yeah.
I'm explaining to you why. You know what they say? They're like, you're cool with Drake?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you know Drake, or you know Scarface? Yeah, call him up right now.
Oh, I've never gotten.
So what am I supposed to say? Yeah, Scarface. Yeah, I got Steve over here. He wants to know if you're really Scarface and I'm friends with you. What the fuck would I do that for? It's like a dick.
Yeah, right.
But what I'm saying is, so it's like, they don't, you know, I think people equate things like, you know, that if somebody's popular or celebrity, that you should be that. You don't have to be that. You can just be friends with them.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
Follow-up question. Can you call Scarface right now?
And prove that you're friends with him.
Let's see.
Has there ever been a shoe that you could not get for somebody?
See, first of all, I got out of doing that because most rappers, most celebrities
have small feet.
Don't want they don't want to pay, and they want it usually afterwards where it's harder to get. You know what I mean? And they don't want to pay over box price. So I didn't want to. I got out of getting sneakers for people because it was like, first of all, too many, it became too competitive. And second of all, it became like there wasn't much money in it for me. Like, you know, I have such a heart. You know what I mean? I didn't want to, like, pause but bang people in the head.
Right.
You know?
By the way, are you really calling Scarface?
Yeah.
Well, he won't know who we are.
Yeah.
Hold on.
No, well, now Scarface is on the phone.
Hey, Face, what's up? I'm sending my blessings your way, motherfucker. What's going on, brother? Are you playing golf right now?
Fucking no.
Let me ask you something. Top Golf. Do you believe in Top Golf?
Do I what?
Top Golf. You know that the joint that you can hit the golf balls with.
Yeah.
Face, what up, brother?
It's all good. What about Top Golf?
No, I like Topgolf. I wish they made one in New York. Anyway, listen, I'm with my friends, Eric and Jeff. It's The Real Podcast, and we were talking about how much I love Houston. And I was, like, talking about Face, and I said, listen, we got to call Face and just send. You know when you feel like you got to make sure you send your blessings and love and make sure somebody's okay?
Right.
Oh, that's what we're doing. Are you still juicing and drinking all the fucking arugula and spinach and all that?
No, not no more.
What? Face, I was talking to Rico the other day. I said, when's Face coming back into New York? No?
Yeah, I'm here.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Face, I want you to just tell the we're doing a podcast real quick. I just want, not my show, we're doing a waste of time. Real. I want you to just tell the people, I know you love the New York City subway train, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, I mean, I love the subway system.
It's funny. There's a reason. Face is somebody, whenever he comes to New York, always takes mad Instagram videos. Face, you see Instagram got live on there, right? Instagram live? Uh-oh, you backing up.
I feel like he's fighting someone.
Yeah. Face, you good?
He ran in front of the right motherfucker, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's all good.
You okay, Face?
I'm going to call you back.
All right, brother.
Scarface.
Yeah, or that was the guy who was pretending to be Scarface.
Yeah, right, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Only one way to tell.
So, no one wants to pay for their shoes.
No, it's just, to be honest with you, at that point in time, I just felt like, you know, there was so many people that, you know, they want it, like, for instance, you got to give people a heads up. You know, when you want it afterwards, you're going to pay more.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you know, and then at that time, people weren't willing to pay. You know, people would complain. It's the worst. It's the worst. It's a big hustle. Shout out to anybody who resells sneakers and does stuff like that, or, you know, it becomes the plug to get somebody, because people always want the most limited thing.
Yeah.
Right? Don't want to pay the most for it, you know, yeah. And then want to wait until it's released, you know. Yeah. Or if after it's released. I hope Face is okay, man. It sounded like he was backing up, and I think he almost hit somebody or pulled in a park.
Yeah.
No, actually, you know what? I think I heard somebody say, I've been waiting here for 25 minutes. Maybe Face pulled into a parking spot where they were trying to get in?
Maybe he needs to bring some friends and move that car.
Exactly right. Yeah. I'm just concerned that he's not my biggest concern is that he's not juicing anymore, which is, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know about that. Yeah. He lost a lot of weight.
More power to him, but it doesn't hurt to juice in any event. Did you ever do the equivalent of throwing the New York Post in water or whatever, stealing their papers for another shoe reseller?
No, I never looked at it like that. You know, I always used the people around me to build up. Like, for instance, I had friends that, you know, had a tremendous amount of pairs in size 12 and 13, and Drake wears a size 12. And, you know, I was able to, you know, make them make money, you know. Mm-hmm. I always, and it goes back to saying, like, wanting to, you know, if somebody don't have something to help them out, like, you know, if that's your homie. Mm-hmm. I've always built a team around me to try to help uplift, not just, like, use. So, you know, even like with Charlamagne, like, he said something when he came on, and he was like, yo, I don't want people to do things for me. Like, I don't want someone to go shoot somebody for me. I want to hire someone as my security.
Mm-hmm. To shoot someone for you.
Right. Well, it's different. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, where it's like you have people around you that just do things for you, you know, and could get arrested. Like,
right.
Just, I'm talking about, like, give people opportunities, you know?
So you're saying that you did not, like, get goons to beat up, like, Ben Kicks or something?
No, at that time, that kid was it was in his father's nuts.
No, but that's when you have to get
Bowman. The fuck do I know about him? I'll be honest with you, it's amazing to see. Honestly, I sit here and I say, these kids, it's amazing. People ask, what do you think about resellers? Resellers, I don't ever be mad about that, bro. I had to fucking go in the paper route. We're not talking about raining. I never talk about wearing a poncho and it's fucking pouring. You know, I'd still not even be able to do it. That I went to hustle because that wasn't the right thing to do, but I wanted it quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the point I'm trying to make is these kids, they're young. They wear a Yeezy four times. They sell it for fucking thousands of dollars.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot. Like, I feel like they're becoming young entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. And what's more important than the money is the Instagram likes, and that's right.
I mean, that means a lot to people. That means a lot to people. I mean, girls are out here, you know. Anyway, I don't even want to get into that, man. But yeah, it's a false hope, man. That's why I always tell people: appreciate your friends for more than Instagram likes and retweets.
Yes. So now. In the podcast world, you were talking about you have Tax and you have Dallas Penn on this episode of your show talking about podcast beef, and everyone has podcast beef.
Yeah, well, nobody ever admits to a podcast beef. They always say it's not such a thing, where I think it's stupidity because it is a thing because people always want to be first. Just like Elliot, you know, I get it. He wants to be first. He wants to have that first guest. And I think we all want to crack the cherry of somebody who hasn't been on yet. Like when we did Dame Dash, you know, mm-hmm. you haven't heard from him in a long time. Boom, he comes out. So who could we think of now who's never been on a podcast? I don't know. I never heard Nas on a podcast,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if anybody gets Nas, boom, that's a big fucking deal for that week.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, like I told Tax, look, he got Meek Mill. Okay, what are you going to do next?
Right.
That was a big one. Yeah.
I will say that Eric and I are not going to get Nas. I don't think.
You don't think so?
No, we were Jay-Z fans.
Oh, right. That's the big problem.
And we made
well, apparently they both don't care, so you shouldn't fucking care. But podcast beef, you know, I say to myself, you know, does it exist? Of course, you know, I think that, you know, like, for instance, even, like, you'll see, like, Rosenberg, not Seif, but, you know, once in a while, he'll flex and say, like, look, you know, this Rakim episode we did was amazing.
Right.
Nobody will pick it up. But at the end of the day, you know, I think we like the way it's put to me is like, you know, you can't get this stuff on radio. You know, a podcast is really for the people.
Right.
And it can't be blocked because you put it out there. If this was distributed by radio, it would be blocked.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but okay, so like when we did the Jeff Sledge episode,
mm-hmm.
And
shout
out
to Jeff.
He was talking about you know, some stories with Pimp C and mm-hmm. how...
Yeah, he was the...
he was talking about International Players Anthem.
What was he?
He was the A&R?
He was the A&R for... yeah, for them.
But there was a big story that came out of it as to, you know, Pimp C not liking how Andre had, you know, dimmed
taken out his drums.
Yeah,
all that stuff. And so I went on Twitter and I was like, I feel like we have good moments like this in every episode, and there should be things that Complex or, you know, any of the blogs will pick up.
Pick up, sure.
And then that episode did get picked up by all those places.
Yeah, I seen that. I remember that.
So the moral of the story is, if you complain, Jeff, people will.
So keep on complaining.
Yeah.
Keep on fucking complaining.
Oh, believe me, you want to know what? I'm Jewish. I'm going to keep on complaining for everybody.
You complaining motherfucker.
So you're not living in Brooklyn anymore?
No, I live in Jersey, man.
You've changed. How much do you miss Brooklyn?
Not at all.
Do you miss the... You have a youngster of your own now.
Yeah. I have a baby boy. I have such a crazy gap. I have a 17-year-old and a 2-year-old.
But do you think that the way he's going to be raised is... not suffering, but do you think there's something missing from him not having that Brooklyn...
Yeah, I'm scared. I think about that every day. You know, the reason why I moved away from Brooklyn was for a better life. And what I mean by that, when I say a better life, is to be able to become a homeowner. You know, my lady that I'm with now, you know, we were able to get something. We would never be able to buy a home in Brooklyn. And you know, it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so to be able to, you know... And it's nice to be able to give your kids that. And I'll be honest with you, living in such a fast-paced world all my life, being a person that's always witty on their feet, you know, moving, da-da-da-da-da,
yeah.
Jersey's 5 minutes slower, and I appreciate that. And, you know, I guess I really, really – sometimes I'll be honest with you, it don't take much to make me happy anymore because, you know, I see the deer – You know, it's dope. I like it. You know, mm-hmm. it's like it's pretty cool. And I do worry if he'll be any street smart. But at the end of the day, you know, I think I could try to instill some stuff in him. A lot of those kids in Jersey, I feel like they're bored out there, and they do dumb things like they rob lawnmowers or something. You know
what?
Yeah. No. I'm just saying, like, they get into dumb
that
trouble.
Is a dumb thing.
Yeah, but I was like, bored. What an example.
Who knows? They get caught doing dumb shit. So, you know, because they're always bored. That's all you hear out in Jersey. All those young kids, they're bored. They're bored.
Do meth.
What?
Yeah, meth they're
crazy. The pills out there. They're probably all on those fucking things.
Yeah.
But I do worry. I do worry because I got a lot of book smart from my father.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being away, I read so many books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the street smart I definitely, you know, got. And I feel like it has helped me. It has helped me, you know, having both.
Yeah.
I don't know if in this world you could ever give really both all the time anymore. And so I am worried a little bit. But I feel like I'm going to try my best. But I want him to grow up different. You know, like, you know, keep in mind, as a parent, you know, we grow up to give our kids things that, you know, we never had.
Right.
And then in the interim, we spoil them.
You could never give him shoes that you never had.
So. No. Well, he already gets. Foot Locker sends him a bunch of shit.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, he's already, he's got a crazy collection. Bro, let me tell you something. The internets, as we call them, and I really appreciate it. Again, I want to go back to saying I never made a ton of money where I could do things that, like, I don't go on Instagram and put Rolex. Like, I don't wear jewelry. I'm not living like that. You know what I'm saying?
We got a picture of that Lincoln Mark 8, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to bring up an old throwback picture. But you know, I don't. Dan, there was a point I was fucking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Make.
Yeah, yeah. Your son's shoes. What the internet's?
No, the internet's, man. Yeah. Like, you know, just from being friends with people. You know how like it's amazing the love you get. I mean, you know, I'm sure you get it when you go to different places from, you know, creating things over the years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just like, you know, like when my son was born, bro, people were DMing me, asking me for my address to send me sneakers or send me a gift.
That's awesome.
Like, and I felt like, you know, like strangers.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, how do you ever, like, because, you know, a lot of things I do, a lot of people may not know. And I sometimes I do say it, sometimes I don't. But I feel like sometimes I suffer. I don't know why. Maybe it was jail, but I suffer from depression sometimes. And even, you know, I get depressed. I don't know why, you know. And, you know, it's weird when you get depressed and you don't even know why you're getting depressed. So I always speak about depression. And I always tell people if they have any problems or issues they're going through or feel depressed, you know, that they're not alone, to DM me. And I get DMs all the time. Like, weird. Like, well, sometimes I say, oh, shit, I may open up a can of worms.
Because I'm not.
I have people tell me, like, oh, I feel like dying. You know, thank you for always talking about this. And I'm like, damn, if I don't get back to this person in time. But thank God I was able to do that. And you know, I'm not on here saying, like, but I've helped a lot of people over the years. I would get on phone calls with people and take my time, just because, you know, I don't know what it is. I just have like this, and it comes with probably my loyalty, but I just have like I just want to help people. And sometimes I've helped people who without even helping myself yet, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is. I guess I just feel like you know, my life could have went sideways, and, you know, I got a second chance at life. I'm trying to make the most of it, and I just want to help other people.
Well, we love you, Pete, but we also love the old Pete. So can you leave us with the story? I think I got this right. Were you on, like, acid or LSD, and your mom caught you or something? You told us. I feel like you told us off on mic when we were on your show. Yeah.
I did. Wait. It was, Oh, okay, wait. I'll leave you with two stories.
Okay.
I'll leave you with two stories. The first one is, hey, I'll go to my mother. So the first one is, I was on acid and diesel. So I smoked a blunt, and we dipped it in diesel and dust.
Yeah.
And I was tripping. Mm. And when I came home, and I'll never forget, I came home from the club, and she was a midget.
Oh, this is...
She was a midget. And she made me pancakes that were the size of... And she said, you want pancakes? And I said, yeah. And she made me these pancakes that were fucking like the size of a tractor trailer tire. So I kept on asking her, why are they so big? And she was like, what are you talking about? Just eat them. And then she said, you want blueberries? And the fucking blueberries were the size of bowling balls. And I was fucking bugging. And I couldn't. And let me tell you something. She was so small, and the chairs were humongous. I was fucking bugging. But then it was crazy. But here, I'll give you a. That was my days when I was
that
fucking.
That was the story.
Just
yeah.
being a crazy fucking druggie. But here's this. I'll never forget this. One time, I invited Bun B over my mother's house. And I said, listen, Bun, while you're here, one of these times we're going to get you. You're going to come over to my mother's, and she can make you a home cook Italian meal. We finally get a fucking time to go. We go out to my mother's, and, you know, I introduce him to everybody. And before I told him I was coming, I says, listen, my friend Bun B, you know, he's a rapper, blah, 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 you know, whatever. They don't fucking understand. So fucking, I introduce him to everybody. I have my 95-year-old grandmother there. I have my father, my brother, my sister. And, you know, he comes in the house as smell, they're cooking like the pasta, the baked ziti, this, that. So of course, Bun, you know, it's taking a while, so Bun goes outside to light up a fucking blunt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He comes back in stinking fucking weed. My grandmother, 95 years old, turns to like look around, and I'm like, oh my God, what is she gonna say? And she's looking at him, and she looks at my mother, and my mother's name is Joanne, and she screams, Joanne, you're overcooking the brajol. And then my mother's like, what are you talking about? We're not overcooking the rajon. And Bun looks at me, and we're about to fucking die laughing. So we sit down, we have dinner, and my mother's telling them all the fucking dishes, and they're talking about Houston and rapping and this and Italian stuff and all this, a bunch of crazy stuff. So, you know, long story short, you know, we had dessert. He loved it. It was a fucking beautiful meal. We get in the car and I bring him back to the city. And so the next day, I get a phone call from my uncle. He was in Florida. It's like an old, he's like an old retired gangster out there. You know, like the lawsuit, fucking the chest hair, yeah. The tight rope chain, the orange tinted fucking glasses. You know, I forgot
Uncle
what
Uncle Paulie, yeah.
Well, they call him, you know, Stevie Knuckles because he has like a fucking It's a long story.
Yeah.
Anyway, he calls me and he's like, hey Pete, you know, and I was like, yeah, what's up, Unc? He's like, yeah, you know, I'm looking for you. I says, okay, well, I'm on the phone. You know, what the fuck are you talking about? So he says, yeah, I spoke to your mother, and you know, I need you to do me a favor. So I said, Unc, what do you want? So right away, I know this fucking guy is like, I don't know what the fuck he wants from me, but he asks me something. So he says, look, he says, I'm opening up a deli down here in Florida. And, you know, I got your aunt, and she's going to make the eggplant and the fucking, we're going to make the potato and egg and a meatball sandwich. It's going to fucking be amazing. But I need a lot of bread. And I said, okay, well, what can I do for you? He says, what do you mean? He says, I spoke to your mother, and she said you have a friend that owns a bread company, Bun B. And I says, what the fuck are you talking about? I says, not, he's Uncle, this guy doesn't own, he's a rapper. And he says, wait, he doesn't own the joint. He wraps the fucking bread. I was like, listen, you know, this guy doesn't own, he's a rapper. Bro, he's like, get the fuck out. He went ballistic. Right away, that's the typical Italian guy thinking to get something out of somebody. But yeah, so that was a Bun visiting my mother. But yeah, so.
Thanks so much,
man. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for having me. I can't believe how much we talked, man. Yeah. You know, like I said, I appreciate you guys. You know, I'm a fan of the show. And I wish you, you know, as the holidays, I wish the internet, you, your families, you know, healthiness, happiness, whatever you celebrate. Yeah. Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, you know, whatever it is. Yeah.
Thanks, dude.
All right, chip.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, this is just one of 12 new podcasts in 12 days.
Well, when you say it like that, it makes it sound like it's not very special.
I think all of our episodes are special.
Yes,
I
every
love them
episode
equally.
Is a snowflake.
That's right.
And they are all cherished until they melt away.
Shout out to everybody who's been rocking with us this entire time. And hopefully you check our whole catalog because we've done a lot of podcasts. Where can people find them?
You can always go to SoundCloud.com/A Waste of Time. You can also go to iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are also on Twitter at It's the Real. Facebook at It's the Real. Instagram at It's the Real. We're on Snapchat, not at It's the Real.
Someone's got to fix that.
I'm not. It's not going to be. I have too many other things.
The real Snapchat names are at It's the Real Eric and at It's the Real.
It's the Real with Sagan.
Yeah.
And you can also find us at the grocery store. Shouts to Homer, Jorge. Mm-hmm. Shouts to
all the people who do such a good job over there.
I see them several times a day.
You can also find us at SOB's on February 23rd, 2017. Tickets are on sale right now for our show, which is called
Your Girls Tour.
Your Girls Tour. Be there
or be dead.
That's right. You know this podcast won't grow without us shouting out our listeners and trying to get them to tell all their friends about it. And by the way, we've seen some of you on Instagram. After we shout you out, shout out the podcast. So we really appreciate that. Shout out to 80s Baby.
Yeah.
But that's not my official shout-out. Who's your official shout-out, Jeff?
I would like to shout-out two people from SoundCloud.
Oh.
I want to shout-out...
I wonder if they're the same people that I'm about to shout-out, but go ahead.
Slotmaster00, that's Jose from East L.A.
All right.
Jose from East L.A. is a better...
whatever.
I mean, I don't know what Slotmaster00 is a pretty good one, too.
Yeah.
And I also...
He was the first Slotmaster, you know?
Well, yeah. And I want to shout-out... Camboy GW.
Shout out to Camboy GW.
Shout out to me for remembering that I had to shout out Camboy GW. But shout out to Camboy GW. He's always leaving comments on SoundCloud and very much appreciated.
I also would like to shout someone else from SoundCloud, Monty Styles, who is a regular commenter. And we appreciate all those regular comments. He is there week in, week out. We love the listens. We love the comments. We love the interactions. And hopefully, we will see you guys at SOBs on February 23rd. Again, you can go to itsthereal.com. Get tickets right now. Jeff.
You want to know what? If you're not showing up to SOBs, then we're never going to see you ever again. Don't even come up to me.
That, you know what? We should stand true to that. Jeff.
I won't stand true to that. I'm a very friendly
person. We got another podcast tomorrow. Should we tell him who it is?
We should.
All right, go ahead. Is it the Flatbush Zombies?
It is the Flatbush Zombies.
Shout out
good thing that you guessed right.
Shout out to the Flatbush Zombies, Meech and Juice and Eric, all in the building.
We have to rent another microphone.
We all had microphones. Listen tomorrow to hear what that's like. 12 Days Podcast. We'll see you tomorrow.